AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 100 of the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. As always, I am Junkyard James, and with me is my master of ceremonies on this illustrious episode of the podcast, Cody Marinara, my friend. How are you doing this wonderful Thursday evening?
Well, sir, first of all, happy episode 100. Great to be with you and everyone else here in the chat on this lovely Thursday night. Crazy that it's already episode 100. I feel like we just started this thing like a few weeks ago, and here we are, a year and a half later almost, in episode 100. So 100 down, many more to go, shall we say. Doing well. Started a new job 2 weeks ago. Going to be starting a new job in about another 2 weeks. It's crazy how that happens, but hey, you know what? Multiple paychecks. That's how we do things here. You gotta stay saucy, right? How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. It sounds like you're swapping companies faster than CM Punk. Anyways, no, I'm messing with you.
Swapping companies more than Big Show does heel turns.
Absolutely. That's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes in this illustrious world. Now I'm doing pretty good. I got this lingering cough. So if you see me like dying on screen, I'll try my best to mute the mic while I have my issues. But yeah, I know we're doing pretty good. It is it's awesome. We started this rendition of the Beyond the Junkyard podcast at episode 24 of the show. The first 23 episodes were just myself talking. And so for the majority of this show, it's been us. It's an awesome thing that we've been able to make now 100 episodes of this show. But we're gonna switch up the format a little bit here. We're going to jump into a couple different news segments. The first segment will be led by my awesome co-host. It's called On This Day. And basically he'll just go over some of the historical events that happen on the day we record the podcast. And so he'll go through that. I'll lead the next segment. It's called It's Your Birthday. We'll go through some of the birthdays in the wrestling industry, past, present, and future. And I'm going to try and stick as close to the date of the podcast, but in instances like today, where there weren't very many, I may do a couple wrestlers that have birthdays a couple days before or a couple days after. We then have what I think might be the best segment on this show going forward. It's called the Mid-Card Meltdown, and it's pretty simple. It's the middle of the show. We're going to give each co-host a 5 or so minutes. It might go a little longer. It might go a little shorter. just to rant about a random topic in pro wrestling. And then once we both get the ranting out for the week, we'll head into the main event, and we usually will have a big topic. So without further ado, let's jump in. Cody Marinara, take us off on this day.
Well, thank you for this first installment of On This Day. Appreciate that. Before we start getting into what happened on this day in wrestling history for March 27th, got to give a big shout out to one of our sponsors. That would be StubHub. If y'all are looking to score tickets to the hottest events in town, StubHub has got you covered. Whether it's a concert, a sports game, March Madness is continuing on with a Sweet 16 this weekend, and MLB opening day was today. Our beloved Atlanta Braves absolutely took a dog crap, so that's great. One down, 162 to go, or 161 to go, unless we get into a tiebreaker. But anyways, so the MLB opening season happened. A bunch of minor league sports are going on as well. NASCAR is up and running as well. So like I said, whether it's a concert, sports, a game, or that must-see Broadway show, StubHub is your one-stop shop for live event tickets. With millions of listings, you can easily find the best seats at the best prices at StubHub. Use our promo code to score you some tickets as well. Help support the podcast with that. With that being said, let us get into On This Day in Wrestling History for March the 27th. Back in 1967, Fritz Von Erich wins his third NWA American Heavyweight title in Fort Worth, Texas, by defeating Brute Bernard. As a result, his NWA Texas Heavyweight title was vacated, ending that third reign. 1971, Stan Stasiak wins his fifth NWA Pacific Northwest Heavyweight title from Dutch Savage. On this day in 1983, Roddy Piper defeated Dick Slater in Asheville, North Carolina, to win the NWA television title, beginning his second reign. In 1988, WWF held WrestleMania IV at the Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Had 18,165 fans that attended that event. That was a 14-man tournament for the WWF World title that Randy Savage ended up beating the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase to win the WWF title. In 1988, 1 year later, up against the WWF, or excuse me, the same year, 1988, up against WrestleMania IV, the pay-per-view of WrestleMania IV, TBS aired the very first NWA Class of Champions from the Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina. Show got a 5.8 live rating, which is pretty cool. Mike Rotunda, the NWA World Television Champion, pinned Jimmy Garvin in the second round of a College Rules match. Road Warriors and Dusty Rhodes defeated Ivan Koloff and the Powers of Pain. Lex Luger and Barry Windham defeated tag team champions Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. And this is the event that Sting always gives credit that Ric Flair put him on the map. The very first Clash of Champions in 1988, where Sting and Ric Flair went to a 45-minute time limit draw for the world title. Like I said, Sting really gives credit to Ric Flair for putting him on the map during this event. 2010, the WWE held its annual Hall of Fame ceremony there. That was in Phoenix, Arizona, which was also the site of WrestleMania that year as well. So some of the biggest things that happened there for on this day, March 27th to 2025, but just some really historical listings of that happened on this day, March 27th. Over to you, sir.
Special days. Awesome. Thank you, sir, for that. This is our historian for you. He knows. He remembered that all without writing. No, I'm just kidding. He wrote.
I was going to say, I totally lie. I had all that. I had to look all that up.
No. This is the historian of the show. So that is awesome. Let's move on to it's your birthday. But first, a word for WWE Shop. Unleash your inner superstar with WWE Shop. From the electrifying moments of WrestleMania to the hard-hitting battles of Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown, WWE Shop has the gear to match your passion. Snag those authentic tees, hats, and championship belts. Bring the WWE Universe right to your closet. Visit the link below in the description today. Suit up and cheer on your favorite superstars. WWE Shop, because every fan deserves to feel like a champion. So who had a birthday on this day in in the world? Well, let's go with a couple days before. Like I said, there was only a few that I found that had birthdays on the 27th. But let's go back just a couple days. Let's go to yesterday. Happy birthday, late birthday to Paige Van Zandt. She turned 31 yesterday. One of my favorite tag team of all time growing up was La Resistance. And yesterday, Mr. Sylvain Grenier turned 48 years old, March 26th. And then today, another member of one of my favorite tag teams of all time has a birthday today, Mr. Charlie Haas. Happy birthday to Charlie Haas. excuse me. For all you Japanese...
You didn't have to get choked up over Charlie Haas. All right, calm down.
Just such a great tag team wrestler. My Japanese wrestling fans would know this name very well. Kenta Kobashi has a birthday today. If you like NXT, you'll know this name. Riley Osborne has a birthday today. And for all you TNA Knockouts fans, happy birthday to Miss SoCal Val. She has a birthday today, turning 39 years old. Tomorrow, Kurt Hennig would have had a birthday if he was still with us. Mr. Perfect, happy heavenly birthday. Mustafa Ali's birthday is tomorrow. Umaga's birthday would have been tomorrow. Moving into the weekend, Stephanie Vaquer has a birthday on the 29th. Michael Hayes has a birthday on the 29th. Trent Beretta has a birthday on the 30th. I think that's probably what I'll do is I'll just go through some of them. Oh, Mr. Mike Rotunda has a birthday also on the 30th as well. So happy birthday to all of those wrestling fans.
Give another quick shout out for birthdays. Happy birthday to probably the worst championship that is out there in the history of wrestling. The WWE Speed Championship turns 1 year old today in a whole ordeal that nobody cares about, that Andrade left AEW for and soon to be probably Penta and amongst others. So happy birthday, WWE Speed Championship.
Absolutely. Wavy D put in the chat, I think he saw that you missed one thing. On this day in 2008, TNA presented their first ever live edition of Impact from the Impact Zone in Orlando, Florida. So, excuse me, there is that. We're moving in to the mid-card meltdown pretty quick, but this is good. It gives us time to really discuss the main event. So, my friend, it's the mid-card meltdown. I'm going to let you be the first person to vent on the show. Your timer, I don't really have a timer, but it'll give you 5 or so minutes. Do you have any pressing things that you want to melt down about?
I don't really have three things that I would like to melt down about, but I will give it two. I got two. One, how does it feel, Eric Bischoff, to know that a guy that gave you a job for a couple weeks that you continuously shit and trash on a weekly basis, if not probably a daily basis, has just produced and directed a television show and wrote, or is a executive producer and writer of a television show that has outlasted your top show that you've ever produced in Nitro. Things have gotten so bad in Easy East world. He's relegated to lending mortgages now because the podcast is not doing great. So, in some ways, you know, a lot of people give Eric Bischoff the credit that he deserves in helping establish the NWO and turning the tide in the WCW and Monday Night Wars. But people don't give him also a piece of the pie to blame for the meltdown of WCW as well. Wasn't solely Bischoff, and it wasn't even solely Vince Russo. It was a combination of a lot of things, but Bischoff had a hand in that as well. But I think it's funny how people will give the man kudos for creating the NWO storyline, for helping initiate the Sting Crow character and that whole storyline, for the cruiserweights, for putting WCW on primetime against a Raw, for taking some of the talent from WWE and making them just as big, if not bigger, stars in WCW. But they don't give him the credit that he also deserves for the beginning of the end of WCW as well. So that would be one thing that I would like to throw out there. Another is this whole John Cena heel run. You know, I don't even know if it's a heel run at the moment. It's such a weird, thing that's going on with it. Like the whole I'm a human being thing, and maybe that's the point of it. I don't know. I wish the guy would have came out in a suit and tie with like a, almost like a Al Pacone or Apicone, or whatever the hell his name is, mobster gangster type of theme song, and give me just this complete 180 of whatever he is. Don't give me the hat and the t-shirt and the jorts and the sneakers. Give me something else, man. What are we doing here? I still think this is going to lead to probably SummerSlam. He's going to turn face again and realize that what he did was he sold out to The Rock and basically turns against The Rock, and or in some capacity becomes a face again, and he'll end his career as a face. But just very underwhelming with the way that the heel run has gone so far. I understand the job of a heel is to get you to not like them and to boo them and to not like what they're doing. And if that's the case, yeah, I would assume that I would say that he's doing a good job with it, but it's just a weird gimmick that he's got. This is not what I pictured the John Cena heel run to be. And that Chris Van Fleet interview, I know that he kind of gave a good detail of what the heel run would have looked like in 2012. And that's fine and dandy, but I understand that you probably, because you gave away the secrets, you're probably not going to do that for this heel run, but I was expecting something a little bit more I was expecting something a little bit more gratifying than what we've got so far. And I know the buildup for WrestleMania has not gone great, but it is what it is. And we'll just have to see what happens for the next couple of weeks leading up to WrestleMania. But so far, it is Elimination Chamber, and maybe the first or second week of Raw afterwards made it feel like it was a WrestleMania season. And then it quickly just lost its steam. I don't know what is going on that side of things, but maybe it's just me. I don't know. I just don't see, the hype for it on social media, Facebook and the wrestling groups and on X. I'm just not feeling that enthusiasm as we did for even last year and years prior.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think for the spectacle that WrestleMania is built to be, like, this is supposed to be the one thing that WWE is supposed to get right every year is WrestleMania. And it doesn't seem like, at least the build to it has been very great. We got a comment about your first thing about Tony Khan and Eric Bischoff. We'll show it on the screen here. Never once has Tony Khan ever passed Eric Bischoff in the ratings. Are we really going to celebrate this? TNA passed WCW too. That doesn't mean anything. And let me respond quickly, and then I'll let you have a couple more minutes. TNA has never been on a network as big as Turner Broadcasting. Has never worked with three of the biggest streaming platforms of all time at the same time, with AEW programming on Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, and Max, all at the same time around the world. So we're going to celebrate this because back in 2019, we were told this was just a dumbass t-shirt company. And now 6 years later, we're passing and we'll talk about ratings, and this is great. That's kind of it leads into the main event that we're going to talk about a little bit later. But I'll let you respond to that as well. And those are my two words on it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. You know, it's a great accomplishment from the TNA perspective as well. A company that we probably should have died three or four times is still going, and even Impact has surpassed Nitro as far as episodes and the amount of time it's been on TV as well. And kudos to TNA for doing that. I'm very, very surprised we're talking about ratings when Eric Bischoff is not even in the wrestling business anymore, because if it was about ratings, he would have a job, right? I mean, this guy created the NWO. This guy created the high-flying cruiserweights that we see on TV. He established the we've got something for everyone between the cruiserweights and the hard-hitting action and the Nitro girls and, you know, the big jacked-up dudes like
Luger and it's where the big boys
giant play. Hogan. Yeah. And so, I mean, if we're really going to base it off of that, that's pretty funny because, like I said, I mean, the guy's not even in the wrestling business anymore. And if it was really about the legitimacy of a ratings war and a ratings battle, you would think somebody that has that kind of resume with as much as he did would have a spot in the wrestling business, and he doesn't. I mean, hell, he went back to WWE in 2019, right, and lasted 6 weeks. So, I mean, there you go.
I think he just got cut from MLW a couple of weeks ago. So,
yeah, there you go. you could also say the same thing for AEW's never done a 40,000 attended Dynamite, whereas Nitro did that. And that's fantastic. And that's a very true statement. However, WCW as a whole never drew more than 50,000 people for any sort of show ever, including pay-per-views and weekly television shows, whereas obviously All In did 70, 80,000, and then Wembley last year did 50,000. So it's a two-way street, I guess, but it's just funny how Tony Khan has gotten so much shit-talking over the last 5 years, 6 years, and accomplished way more than any of us have ever done in the wrestling business, and I feel we should give the guy some flowers at least for doing something. Give us an alternative. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely, I agree. All right, here's my turn. This is gonna be, I love this because we can get all of our sound bites from this 10 or 15 minute section of the show. Here's my rant of the week. So for the last couple of weeks now, Adam Copeland, Cope, has been called a lot of things by the casual wrestling fans that he's an egomaniac and he doesn't want to put people over and he's using creative control. And I love how he had an interview this week with TV Insider, and he basically squashed all of these rumors. And this is what he says on his approach to AEW storytelling. I don't factor in where I end up. I always say, where do you need me? You want me to go in this direction? Cool. I'll start putting together some ideas. It's a collaborative effort, but I really enjoy that. Contrary to popular belief, we don't come up with the finishes. I always just ask, where do you need me? Point me in the direction you need me, and I'll get to work. Listen, he does not use creative control in the finishes of his matches. Tony Khan has all creative control. Despite this belief that AEW superstars are big egomaniacs who never want to take a pin or never want to do this or never want to do that, which we've heard about Moxley, which we've heard about Copeland, we've heard that about Mercedes Moné. At the end of the day, Tony Khan has final say on what happened. And the way that the story was told is the way that Tony Khan wants it to be told. And Copeland or Moxley or Mercedes Moné isn't that they don't have the ultimate say. Now, they have creative control in so much as everything's not scripted. Everything's not like in WWE, the whole story from the intro to conclusion is scripted week to week, whereas Copeland is able to do he's able to do a little bit a little differently. We saw an example of this with the promo battle between MVP and Big Bill on Collision last night. It was sloppy, but that's what makes AEW great, is because Big Bill was put to the test on can you keep up with one of the best on the mic. And he did. He held his own. He wasn't perfect. It was a little messy, I think, the promo was. But that's what makes AEW so great, is that it doesn't feel like you're watching a movie. It feels like you're watching a real conversation in real life. Copeland, sure, he hasn't eaten a pen in quite a while. I don't know why that's the way the story wants to be told. That's probably something for Tony Khan to answer. But to say that he doesn't want to take a pen because he's some egomaniac who doesn't want to lose and he doesn't want to put people over, when all he's done since he's came to AEW, with the exception of Ricky Starks, which in my belief, Ricky Starks brought that upon himself. He's done a hell of a lot more to help the younger people behind the scenes than I don't know, someone like CM Punk did in his turn in AEW. So I think Copeland, he gets too much hate for whatever reason by a lot of casual fans who say he's tarnishing his legacy because he joined AEW at the end of his career. The man, it's just like Jeff Jarrett, and when he went to compete for the championship, he was never going to win the championship. But it's something that Tony Khan likes to do to get some of these veterans TV time and their little spot in the sun, and that's it. Copeland, we see now the story looks like it's progressing to where we might get an FTR versus Edge and Christian tag team match at some point in time. And that's a dream match that I think, granted, is at the end of Edge and Christian's career. If it was at the prime of their career, probably would have been a better match. But it's a match we never would have ever even have assumed that we could have gotten in WWE. And so
I would even say that while Tony Khan definitely has the final say of who's going over, kind of maybe where's the end line of the storyline, right, obviously he gives a creative direction towards his superstars to come up with their promos, come up with their gimmicks, come up with their storylines, right, come up with your ideas, and let's collaborate, let's have that conversation. I don't think Tony Khan is a finish guy. That's one of the harder things to do in wrestling, is to be the finish guy.
Right. Anderson was really good at doing Dusty that. Dusty wasn't a finish guy.
Yes and no. Dusty would have some finishes, but it seems like his finishes were a lot of messy, convoluted finishes. You can have that Dusty finish of a smorgasbord of things happening at the end.
Right.
But, you know, Michael Hayes and Bruce Pritchard and things like that, Arn Anderson, those guys were really good at creating those finishes. Or even Paul Heyman, to a certain extent, were good at creating finishes of matches that were different, that were thinking outside the box to try to do something different. And I put money on the fact that Tony Khan, when it comes to the finishing of matches, he doesn't book those. I feel that there is some sort of a group and a collaborative effort. Maybe Jeff Jarrett's one of them. Maybe Jerry Lynn.
Right.
Any one of those agents, Dustin Rhodes even, maybe. I don't know. I don't have an inside scoop, but I'm willing to bet a whole bunch of money that Tony Khan does not say, all right, guys, this is what the finish is going to be, because I've watched a lot of wrestling, and I think this is it. I think that they're going to go, okay, Tony, we have some ideas for the finish, or they're going to go to some of those veteran guys,
right,
like I said, Jarrett, Lynn, things like that, to say, all right, what's your guys' take on this? What do you guys think about this? And come up
and
with
I think,
that.
I think Brian Danielson is part of the inner circle of Tony Khan's writing committee. So
CD, I mean, Christopher Daniels, I'm sure too.
Right. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, do I think the story with Copeland and Moxley, is it worth anything? Was it done to perfection? No, absolutely not. I haven't been a fan of the Death Riders for a while. It feels really stale to me. It's gotten more interesting here the last couple of weeks. And like, we're getting like Willow and Swerve are now kind of really deep in the storyline. And people like Copeland and Christian, they're falling out of the storyline. And that's kind of what this is your main title scene. Like, you can't just take the belt off of Moxley and not have it make sense, because then the same people bitching about Moxley having terrible matches and he can't wrestle, they would be the ones bitching about how him losing the belt didn't make any sense. And so at this point, like, Tony Khan is not in a position where he can really win in the eyes of so-called casual fans, which is why I have been saying, like, don't listen to them. If they don't want to watch your product, if they're just going to bitch and moan and be really fickle about the smallest details of everything, don't listen to your casual fans. Listen to the fans that excuse me, that give a damn. Good grief. And so, yeah, I mean, like, don't listen. The casual audience, they're casual for a reason. And correct. So you can't base all of your booking based off the here some weeks, here or not here other weeks kind of people. You have to book for those that you know will consistently be there week in and week out.
Two really quick points, and then we can kind of move on. I want you to bring up two different comments. There's one from Mr. B. Lee about let's push an aging Copeland for no reason. I'd like for you to bring that up real quick. I already know your combat is going to be that you have trashed Triple H's booking, and that's fine, but we're pushing a 45, 48, 47-year-old John Cena in his last run for a main event spot at WrestleMania. It's the same principle, right? I'm just saying. I know you're probably going to say you've trashed your Triple H's booking, you don't get a booking title. I'm just saying. You know, it's not just we're pushing an aging Copeland. He's a money draw. People know him. It's a recognizable right. figure. They drew over 12,000, 13,000 people in L.A. Was Mox and Cope the reason for that? I don't know. But the fact that it's a headliner, so you're going to put him in a main event spot at some point. He didn't win the title, so it's fine. Next comment is the one right underneath that one, I believe, from Wavy D, about so you're telling me Tony Khan talks to 200. Yes. So a couple different points. Do we know what the hell we're doing with Rhea Ripley? Haven't heard take a pin on Raw to lose the women's championship on a meaningless Raw to set up a triple threat match for WrestleMania? That doesn't even need to happen. We don't know how to book Rhea Ripley. We don't know how to book the women's division as a whole. Secondly, when you have Jeff Jarrett in the creative department, that's what he does. He creates those bigger stars that don't take pins very often. Check. Kurt Angle. Check. Christian Cage. Check. Sting. Check. A bunch of those type of guys in TNA. AJ Styles, for a while, there was definitely some moments where he definitely took pins, don't get me wrong. But when you have these bigger stars, you don't just have them take pins so easily because, yeah, you're protecting them, but it also – you got to get, they're being creative. Okay. Edge still lost twice.
But
I'll even, not.
I'll even go so far as to say is how many times did Triple H book Edge in his last couple months? And this has been the Edge storyline since his return, where he does the concerto spot for a couple weeks. And like, this has been Edge's thing. Every storyline that he's had in his last run, last year in WWE, remember when Beth took the concerto and then he took the concerto in WWE and he didn't take a pin. He got choked out. If my memory serves me correctly and that feud. So this is the same story that even WWE ran with Edge, with Copeland. So it's not like Tony Khan did anything special. He's telling the same story in just a different fashion within a different storyline.
Absolutely. Yep.
All righty. Let me answer this question real quick because I wanted to mention this. Yes, hardcore fans don't want Moxley as champion anymore, but we still have to make it make sense. And I think the hardcore fans are more willing to let Moxley continue being champion for as long as it makes sense and we give the belt to the right person at the right time within the storyline. Yes, sir.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Is Moxley a face or a heel?
He's a heel.
And the hardcore fans will want him as champion?
Right.
Do the job. Plain and simple. Heels are supposed to make you not want them to win anything.
Right.
They just got you. And don't say it's because, no, it's a go-away heat thing. No, it's you don't want him to be champion. You want a face to win. He's a heel. He's doing his job. That's it. You don't want Gunther to be champion, do you? He's doing his job. You may not like it. That's the point of a heel. And I think most of the time wrestling fans like heels because they're usually cool. They have a cool character, a cool right. aura about them. But when they have that, he's stale. Oh, he doesn't do it for me, brother. He's not my kind of guy. He's not my type of character.
Right.
Kind of the point for a heel to do things to get you to not like them. So what if they're not cool? That's being a heel. You want Jey right. Uso to win the world title at WrestleMania because everybody likes Jey Uso.
Right.
That's the point of the storyline. That whole Gunther versus Jey Uso storyline makes a ton of sense. Gunther's right. the heel. Nobody likes him, especially this world title run. Everybody likes Jey Uso. They want him to win the world title at WrestleMania.
Right.
That's wrestling 101. Heels need to be booed and want to see their asses get kicked, and the faces are the ones the people are behind and want to see the chase and let them win the title.
Right.
It's just plain and simple.
Which is why I think like two of the better heels in the business right now are Ricochet, because say you don't like him or not, but he gets the reaction that he's supposed to get from the fans. And also Max Caster. And when the fans pop, when Samoa Joe chokes you out backstage, like, he's doing his job really well. He's playing almost the Logan Paul type character, as good as Max Caster can. Like, let's just be honest. Max Caster's not a great in-ring wrestler. And so to play this gimmick, like, at some point in time, like, Megan Bain just needs to go out there and beat the ever-living shit out of him. And because that's just the character. Yeah, so one of the women just go out there and beat the living fuck out of Max Caster. I really have enjoyed this rendition of Max Caster because let's go, Max. You're the best wrestler alive. All right, anyways, let's move on.
But no, I mean, you're totally – I know I said real quickly again, but I'm going to just really, really quickly. I totally agree with that. Logan Paul does a really good job at this as well, that – playing the crowd really well. People hate him. You know, when you play that character really, really well, it works. And Dominic Mysterio, perfect example as well. Great heels because people generally boo them, and that's right. the heels doing their job, and it works.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to the main event. And our main event is sponsored by or fueled by W Energy. Go to w.gg, get the energy mixes there on the website. Help take down Big Energy with no BS energy products. Use the code Beyond the Yard for 10% off at checkout. Let's go to the main event. And I don't know if you saw, was it Andrew Zarian had an episode of his podcast a couple days ago, and I haven't watched the whole thing, but there's a moment in the podcast where he has sources inside of Warner Brothers Discovery, and I guess he asked them a question about how much they give a crap about ratings for AEW, and this is a clip, a part of what he had to say in that interview.
And I brought up, you know, the ratings and the internet chatter to them, and they're like, they don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even resonate. The right. messaging on broken. The internet is not even resonating with these mm-hmm. people, and they're in key positions there, mm-hmm. so.
So they don't care about the ratings. Sean Ross Sapp put up, and I'm going to pull up his tweet, put up a tweet earlier talking about it at the same time. Let me see. Is it sharing? I think so. Hold on 1 second. Let me pull it up here. He says, a comment that he actually got from a Warner Brothers employee when asked about a low viewership of an episode sometime in the past. People went outside for once. Maybe that's not so bad. They don't give a shit about the ratings. So why are we caring about ratings? But speaking of ratings, you showed me a tweet from the ratings of AEW over the past 5 or 6 weeks, steadily increasing. So the ratings don't matter, but even if they did matter, this narrative that people aren't watching AEW is wrong because the ratings have gone up consistently for the past month and a half as we get into the summer months of AEW. What is your overall thought on one, Andrew Zarian's comment, Warner Brother as a whole not caring about the ratings, and the fact that AEW ratings are going up overall?
I think it's funny because it does break a narrative for what people think. Now, yes, AEW is still not doing Monday Night Raw, even on Netflix, SmackDown on USA. They're not doing those kind of ratings. I get it. But they're still increasing over a 5, 6, 7 week span. It's good. Over a month and a half span to be increasing every week, that's pretty good. That means that whatever you're doing is captivating the audience enough to grow an audience every week. They've got, you know, March Madness kind of breathing down their necks. NHL's getting into the playoff swing of things. Springtime's in the air. It is a Wednesday night, so maybe not as many people are doing things. So that's fair and understandable. But in this digital media age, ratings should not care whole lot about anything, because they're just that, they're just number. And even then, you know, just because Nielsen has been around for forever, they're not the most accurate thing in the world when it comes to ratings, but yet we still care about them. And wrestling fans are so tangible with numbers and numerical values when it comes to ratings, because that's what the Monday Night Wars were for 4 or 5 years, was who won the ratings war, Nitro or Raw? How many weeks in a row did Nitro beat Raw? How many weeks in a row did Raw beat Nitro? It was such a imperial part of our childhood and our growing up phase of who won the ratings war. And it was water cooler talk, and it was cool. And then once we got a product that competed with WWE in some sort, first of all, being TNA back in 2009, 2010, when they competed against head-to-head against Monday Night Raw, not a great idea. They killed it within 2 months, and because there's no reason for it. But yet we catered so much to that because we want that nostalgic feeling back. That was what we determined was if a wrestling product was really good or not, was how many people watched. If Nitro drew a 3.8, that sucks. They did shit. If Raw drew a 5.5, holy hell, they were great. Or if they did a 5.5 and the week before they did a 6, well, what happened? They lost 500,000 viewers. It must not been that good. It must have been a trash Raw. Like, they were so caught up for 4 years straight of ratings supremacy that it's carried over. It's carried over. When we had the Wednesday Night Wars for a few years, that was one of the biggest talking points in the week of wrestling, was who won between NXT and Dynamite. And it was cool. But, like, we're in this digital age now where people just don't care so much about ratings. And most of the stuff is on streaming anyways, that it doesn't give a fair, accurate perspective of live viewership audience. You can have 500, 600, 700,000 people watch a live product on your main channel. How many people are watching the simulcast on Max or on any streaming platform? When it comes to live original content, wrestling, sports, TV shows, reality shows, whatever, that's the name of the game, is who's got the rights to do original programming, live programming at that. And wrestling has always been a commodity in the television world of live, original, unscripted, scripted programming. That the reason why Fox spent so much money to get them in the first place, why NBC continues to do TV deals. And I was in that with Warner Brothers as well. So the fact that wrestling is still a hot commodity for live original programming is great. And just watch. And I think numbers really shouldn't matter as much as they people hype it up to be in this day and age.
Yeah, no, I completely agree that ratings are a great tool to see if your booking is heading in a decent direction. But I don't think as a booker, you should spend the entirety of your time booking a show just to pop the biggest rating. But there are times and like this past week Collision, the two night Saturday, 1 hour, Sunday, 1 hour, 520 something thousand fans because of the lead in from the NCAA tournament. So Tony Khan, everybody asks him a lot, like, why do you take these weird times for the Saturday show and these weird lead ins? Well, it's so that they can boost this rating. But Tony Khan's not going to book for that rating. They know Tony. I have a very hard time believing that Tony Khan thinks, well, we're going to get this college basketball fan lead in that we're going to get all of the fans to stay and watch the show the whole time. I don't think Tony Khan thinks that. Tony Khan knows we'll get him for 5 minutes. That's why on Saturday night, the first match was Adam Cole versus Daniel Garcia for the TNT championship. That's why the stuff for the marks are always at the end of the show, because he knows you only get them for 5 minutes. So you got to put the stuff that is going to draw those people when you have those opportunities in that first 5 minute window. The ratings, I don't think they really give a damn. You want to know why I think Warner Brothers is fully committed, despite the ratings, behind AEW? Because they've built multiple video games on mobile platforms for AEW. They have given them Max. They're allowing them to work with Amazon Prime and Disney Plus and all of these other streaming sources. They are sponsoring episodes with big movies that like the Minecraft movie, which that's a big movie. It might not be the greatest thing in the world, but that's a big thing that you have a movie sponsor your entire episode of Dynamite. And so Warner Brothers obviously is committed to this product. We've seen it time and time again in all of their end of quarter numbers when they have their end of quarter calls praising AEW. This year, I believe, will be the first year AEW will be able to show a profit. They are a profitable company in 6 years. That is an accomplishment in this industry. That is an accomplishment in this industry in 6 years, especially at a time when it costs a lot of money. And remember, AEW is, as far as I understand, they're paying all the production costs. Warner Brothers, I don't think, are paying any of the production. They're just distributing the show. They're not producing the show. Like, AEW has full production, I believe, of that show. And so the ratings don't matter. I don't want to hear this talk about how the ratings are so bad and who cares? This is what I'm trying to get people to understand. Watch what you fucking want to watch. I don't care if you watch WWE. I tend not to watch it. I don't. It's not for me, and I understand that. I understand WWE is not for me, so I'm not going to sit there and watch a 3 hour Raw, and you know fall asleep at 9:30, unless I want to fall asleep at 9:30. I'm not going to sit there and torture myself with something that I'm not really interested in. But the people that sit there and they watch AEW just to like torture themselves or to find like JD from NY, the biggest bitch on social media, can't take any criticism without hitting the block button. I found that out last week. But sits there and he talks shit week in and week out about AEW. Well, then just don't watch the damn product. No one's forcing you to watch it at gunpoint. And so that's my thing. The ratings don't matter. They don't matter to Warner Brothers. They're not going to back out of this contract magically. Like that's a talking point. Well, what happens when Warner Brothers pulls out of the contract? They're not satisfied with the number. They're not going to. They're not going to back out of this contract. Why? Because on Max, AEW is one of their best live events weekly on Max. It brings people into the show. It allows them to sell advertising on Max. Because we get those ads every commercial break for Max. This is their big money thing. They want live TV. That's why the Warner Brothers is willing to put unrivaled the 3-on-3 women's basketball league on Max. Why they're willing to put like cycling on Max or some of these soccer games on Max, because it allows them to get live content, which allows them to get sponsorship. That's all this is. The sponsors are there. They're not leaving. AEW is doing great. They're profitable. And from all insider reports, they're very thrilled with where AEW is. And at the end of the day, some casual podcaster on the internet isn't going to change that, because the biggest opinion, the only opinion that matters about AEW is Warner Brothers, because they're the ones that show them on, that allow them to use their network. Now, the minute that Warner Brothers decides that they're not happy with it anymore, all right, maybe we can have that conversation. But we're not at that point yet. And so let's shut up with all of this ratings talk, because it doesn't matter to them. I get tired of it. We're 6 years into this, and we're still bitching about ratings. They're never going to hit the numbers that WWE is hitting. And that's okay. I talked about this on my last solo episode. They were never meant to hit the same numbers. They were always meant to be that alternative for the minority of wrestling fans that wanted actual pro wrestling and not Disney Channel.
I 100% agree. Now, one thing that I want to bring up is the whole quarter hours thing and the whole you lose viewers over time as you are going on TV. And that's true. I do believe AEW loses about 2 to I guess it depends on where you kind of look at it at from beginning to end. But we'll go, for example, last night, started out at, let's see here, according to WrestleNomics.
I got the quarter hours. Okay. I subscribed to WrestleNomics, so I got the quarter hour. They started at 785,000 at the 8 a.m.
And they ended up where?
They ended up at the overrun at 576.
So about 300,000, right?
Well, we dropped about 200,000.
Okay. I haven't been able, because I literally just subscribed to him as well on Patreon. I'm trying to find the quarter hours for, because I'm not going off of Raw. Raw's on Netflix. I'm not going to go off of that. I'm going to go off of the SmackDown viewership, and I can't find the one from this past. There's not even one for March that I can see for SmackDown, unless I'm not looking in the right area. But The last one that I see was February 28th, and then I went back to February 21st and February 14th. Consistently, SmackDown is losing 300,000 to 400,000 from beginning to end. I don't care if it's a three-hour show. If you want to cater so much that you lose viewership as the show goes on, it's the same damn argument. SmackDown loses between 300,000 to 400,000 people from 8 p.m. or whenever the hell it starts to 10 or 11. Right. I mean, it's the same damn – it's the same conversation. Now, if you look at the trends over the last 6, 7, 8 months, SmackDown's gone up and down. Raw went up and down. NXT's gone up and down. Not as bad. And AEW, for the most part, has been as consistent. A little bit of flux here and there. NXT has been pretty consistent as well. Some weeks are higher than the others, but they've been pretty consistent. Raw, SmackDown just go up and down. They fluctuate. But the same principle happens for every TV show. I'm sure NXT is the same way. I'm sure, you know, most SmackDowns are the same way. From beginning to end, you are going to lose viewerships.
Right.
In this case, SmackDown, 3 million, 4 million that I've seen, or excuse me, 3 to 400,000. Same thing with AEW, about 3 to 400,000. It's the same argument. Where's your logic? Same principle. It happens. It is what it is. It is what it is. Your numbers suck. It's over six, you know, 500,000 to 600,000. I mean,
right.
Listen, once a hater is always going to be a hater. They're never going to be pleased. And I guess when you watch Mickey Mouse product over the last 10, 15, 20 years, you're just preconditioned right. to liking that kind of thing. But that's fine. Like what you like. I mean, I don't trash Raw or SmackDown every single week because I don't watch it. I don't have a mm-hmm. point to watch it because it's not enticing me enough to watch it.
Right.
So why shit talk it when I don't even watch it? All I'm going to say is it's not captivating me enough to watch the product. AEW is capturing me enough to watch their product. And I feel over the last 3 months, AEW has done really good storytelling to captivate their audiences. And the numbers have grown over a 6, 7 week period on an average viewership basis that people are seeming to be more invested into their storylines. I'm not saying an astronomical number, a realist, not a whole lot, but it's an increase.
Right.
That's good news for them that their live TV viewership is doing well, considering the fact that people can just pay a certain fee and watch it on Max. And I'm sure right. there's still quite a few people that do that as well. But listen, it's numbers are numbers, and people are going to complain about right. anything and everything. And at this point, like I said, you're never going to be able to please them, and it is what it is.
Right. No, and so there are so many metrics that you can look at that can that shows how a company is doing or the direction that a company is going. And take for granted, AEW, they did the smartest thing they could have ever done, and that is they're booking these awkward venues that I don't think wrestling has ever really been in some of these venues. Like, the Boston show is going to be at the amphitheater at Fenway Park. Like, it's not in yep. Fenway, but the amphitheater in Fenway Park. They've been doing a lot of these, like, theaters and just creating this really intimate experience, small crowd experience. And it makes the TV product look so good when you have 3,100 really close and intimate fans. And they go through the crowd and you don't have to pan out for miles to see, you know, all 770,000 fans. You have this close, intimate setting. Perception is reality. AEW looks like yeah. they're selling out arenas. And because they are, they're selling out small arenas. And I think there has to be a correlation between what the product looks like on TV to the reaction to the fans. And so I don't know. We've been calling for them to run smaller venues.
We've been saying it for 2 years that they should have been doing this a long time ago. When they really started diving into booking these 18,000 seat arenas and filling 3,000 to 4,000, and it just looks terrible. been claiming that for years. Don't act like you guys were the first ones to do that. I'm not saying we were the first ones to do that, but we've been saying it for a shit ton of time that they need to be going to booking smaller venues because it looks terrible on TV and from a numerical standpoint. The whole booking half-empty arenas or taking pictures of it happened 2 years ago. We were clamoring for it then. We got it. And they finally listened. Thank God. And yet you guys still probably aren't going to give them credit for that, but they're listening. They did it. They're booking smaller venues. They're selling out most of them. And they're booking the bigger venues for pay-per-views, and they're selling them out too. And it's looking great. And that's why maybe the product is doing a little bit better, because on TV, the intimate setting, the hotter crowds, the more vocal, but they're filled. I don't know if that's a correlation to it, but I just think overall the storytelling has been really good over the last 3 to 4 months. Yeah, that's only 3 to 4 months. I get it. But coming from the goalposts always move. It was, they're just a glorified indie show, which is really all in the first one. And then it became a t-shirt company, and the t-shirt company thing went away. And then it became, well, they don't have any storytelling. They just do spot fest. There's no thought process going to the matches. And now it's, they couldn't fill out arenas, or the turnstile number was different than what the ticket purchase were. And at All In London the first time, book smaller venues, or just, there's no storytelling. The goalposts move so much with this company. It's so hilarious because you're never going to please them. And that's fine.
Right. Look at how the goalposts moved just for the Australian show. Well, they never said it was a pay-per-view, and they just see, they never said it was or wasn't. And again, that show had never been a pay-per-view before.
Showing me a screenshot on Reddit for a person that lived in Australia that thought it was also a pay-per-view, but never had a full proof of a poster or something on a website or an insiders for only Australian people. There was no physical proof that it was a pay-per-view. That is what people were led to believe. It wasn't good, but it never came out that it was supposed to be a TV or a pay-per-view. But hey, guess what? They still sold out an arena of 15, 16,000 people in Australia for the first time they ever did that.
And they got a hot number that night too. So,
yeah, absolutely. And then it went to the small ring.
Right. And the small ring. And then the, if the ring was bigger, maybe Buddy wouldn't have hurt himself, even though he twisted his ankle jumping down from the size of the ring wouldn't have prevented him from not twisting his ankle there. And then every single week there's always something. Oh, well, you're not using this character right, or you're not using this guy right. Well, that's torturous. I don't sit there and talk about how you're not using, I don't know, Shinsuke Nakamura correctly on TV. Like, because it doesn't, I don't watch the show. I don't give a damn how Triple H is booking the characters. He's the booker. He can do what he wants. I'm just there to watch the product. And I'm not going to watch something I hate. And so I want to answer this question here. And then we'll end the show at this point. So if someone watches AEW and says the product is bad, they need to get better and are concerned with the numbers because no growth means you're dying, would that make them a hater? No, not necessarily. But why are you watching a product that you don't think is good? Why are you torturing yourself? I don't sit there and watch something that I hate just because I want to see it get better. If you think it's bad, why watch it?
See,
why torture yourself?
Yeah, correct. My issue with that is everybody can have opinions. That's what the First Amendment is all about. Duh. Not saying you can't have an opinion. You can absolutely talk about how bad AEW is, how much you don't like the product, how much you try to watch it, it doesn't work for you. After a certain amount of time of you or anybody just talking nonstop garbage for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, you just get turned off from it. It's the same. It's going to be the same argument over and over again. And hey, listen, that's your prerogative. That's your opinion. You do with it what you want. You voice it however you want to. I choose to use my voice as what I watch on TV, what I post on social media. If I'm not interested in the product, I'm not going to post about it. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to watch it. That to me speaks more volume than shit talking on a product for weeks and months on end. because it does the same. It's just nothing. It's just repetitive. And to me, it's talking solely negative about something for weeks and months on end. Does nothing. It's just, you're just fueled with hate and just become a hater at that point. And AEW can do whatever they want to do, and it's going to do no right. You wanted storytelling. They're giving that to you. You don't like it. They're giving you characters that have meaning to them. Some of them, you still don't like it. Giving you great matches, you don't like that either. And listen, no matter what they do, you don't like it. It is what it is. They've tried to change the product. And if you still don't like it, I don't have to tell you. Just don't watch it. They're not going to be perfect in your eyes. No wrestling company is perfect. AEW's not perfect in my eyes. WWE's not. NXT's not. AEW just has what I like the most in a wrestling product at this point. And WWE does some good things as well. They absolutely do. When they get it right, there's nobody better. Just like WrestleMania last year, for the most part, how they somehow turned that whole chicken shit into chicken cordon bleu. And it ended up fine. Created a great moment with Cody winning. And John Cena finally turning heel. Created a great moment. A lot of buzz. And like I said, when they do things the right way, which is their WWE way, there's no better. They are the kings of the road for a reason. When AEW get things right with the Mariah May and Tony Storm storyline, it was great. I enjoyed the hell out of it. Swerve and Hangman. So it's just...
If I can interrupt there, but even with the Mariah storyline, we were the first to sit here and say as good as the ending was, it was not at the right point in the card. So it's not like we sit here and just defend everything AEW.
Absolutely not. No.
No, we have our issues with the product. There are things that the product we think can be better, but we don't. What we're saying is I'm not going to spend hours of my life every week to watching a product that I don't like, just so that I can go on a podcast or go on social media and make my opinion. Like, didn't Triple H have a part, like a promo several years back about a guy named Mark who's going to cry on social media or something like that when he was like an authority figure on screen? Like, that's exactly what these people do, is they watch this product that they don't like, and then they post, as if Tony Khan, Tony Khan probably is up at night reading all of these comments, but he's not going to change his booking. He's not going to change his booking because JD from NY called him a money mark with daddy's money, and he likes to snort cocaine. Like, your comments aren't going to change the booking. And that's what, like, their biggest thing. Well, we're concerned. We want them to be better. But Tony Khan doesn't care about your comments.
He's not only that, but two more things. With Wavy D's comment about the touch up on his Nitro and AEW question, if you could find that, I guess we can bring that up and answer that question. You as a fan can say a product sucks and you want them to change. But when they are trying and you still don't like the product, and they're trying and there's something different in all sorts of different segments and moments on the show week to week, but you don't like it, at what point do you just become a hater and it doesn't matter what you say? Like I said, they went from a glorified indie show to actually producing a 2-hour television product every week, to multiple shows, to developing characters, to developing actual storylines with thoughts into them, to actually having a few good months into storytelling, not just a good month, and building shows correctly and building shows right. We've moved the goalposts. We've tried. They have tried to cater to whatever those people are saying. And if you still have a problem with it, at what point do we just not give up? But if you're liking something different, go watch something else, because evidently what they're trying and what they've tried to do, what they've tried to change, is not working. So find something else.
Well, and it would be like, and I'm going to use an example, and I already know they're going to be like, oh, this example doesn't fit 100% perfectly. And I know it doesn't, but this is the best way that I can describe this. It would be like if you went to I don't know, a high dollar steakhouse, and they you go and you order whatever the most popular thing is on the menu, and it just wasn't something that you liked, and so they refund you and allow you to get something else, and they're working with you, and then the next thing you just don't like it. And then they're working with you and you just don't like, well, at what point are you just not going to get up and walk away? I don't like anything that you're providing me. I'm not going to sit here and waste my time trying all of these different food, all of these different options that you're, when AEW didn't give you really good storytelling, but they gave you the dream matches. And you're like, well, if they could just give you good storytelling, maybe I would like, but then they give you pretty decent storytelling and you're still hating on the product. Oh, the stories don't make sense. The stories don't, I don't know who X, Y, and Z is. They need to give me more information on who this character is, even though they're giving you sufficient amount of information on who a character is. And you're still like, go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Again, if you could find that Nitro and Raw or Nitro and Dynamite comment from ABD, I'll look at that. Mr. Beatley said that, like he said before, he doesn't criticize AW out of hate. He solely wanted to be, he wants the show to be better. What has to be better for you to watch it and give it a fair shake, that you like something or like the product? Because like we've said, we've given you different things to try to change and to show something, and it still doesn't work. Not every character needs a story every single week.
Right.
And to be cookie cutter. Right. Because and they're not solely casual fans. But here's the problem. Right. Sorry, I just want to finish that up.
Yeah.
What's the point of a TV show? To get you to come back. If you don't know what the point is of that character, but you're like just the perfect example right now is Megan Bain. She hasn't spoken a word since she's been in AEW in 3 months. Yeah, well, at some point she does need to talk. I get it.
She had that promo on Collision on Sunday.
Correct. Okay. So finally she talked. So maybe that narrative is out of the window. But for the first couple of weeks and even a month, she's coming out and dominating the scene and getting these wins. And she just looks different than the other chicks as far as the Thessalonian gimmick, the whatever she is. Her destroying people. Yeah. Her destroying people is like, okay, they're pushing her. What's this all about? Who is she? Okay. That leads you to now watch the next week. And if you still don't get your answer the next week, yeah, you're a little frustrated. Like, why don't you talk? I need a promo. I need something to give me reason to like this character. At some point, we can't just do that with every single character because it gets monotone. Right. It just gets redundant. I don't need somebody to talk every single week for me to be dived into their character.
Well, and then give me something different. AEW doesn't expect their fans to be able to not find out the information themselves. And we've said this before. Like, I've known who Megan Bain is for years. I've been waiting for her to come to AEW for years. Some people may not have that information. Do a 3 second YouTube search, Megan Bain independent scene, and you'll find a bunch of matches on YouTube, or Google search Megan. Like, you can figure out this information without AEW having to put a 3 minute promo package for every, like, not every character is in a position to where they need a 3 minute promo package.
Like, no, and that's part of the organic storytelling that the character and the wrestler has to present to get more notice. But I feel this is kind of a perfect scenario where AEW lives in the digital media age of, we're not stupid, you're not stupid. You can easily look these people up on a Google search if you really wanted to get a backstory of either where they came from, who they might be, who they wrestled against, who are they. Right. Versus where WWE is, that we have to cater to the people who really don't know things and maybe can't do a Google search, and we have to do, which sometimes they get people from, you know, the PC, and they don't actually have too much of a background. They have to watch NXT or whatever, and they get built up that way, which is fine. But WWE caters to the fact that they don't have a whole, they cater to kids and people who may not want to Google search. They need to, I don't want to say dumb it down, but they just have to give it an easier method of who this character is. Why should I care about them? That's fine. It's just two totally different ways of doing things.
Right. And both, and we're not saying one's better than the other. They're both equally fine. They're both equally fine. WWE has trained their audience to expect to have their hands held, and that's totally fine. AEW just doesn't you just have to have a different mindset when you watch AEW, that the training wheels are off. You're going to have to figure out some of this information on yourself by yourself. But let's get to this Nitro question, because I did miss this one earlier.
By the way, Randall, if everything on the menu sucks, maybe the food just sucks. No, maybe you just don't like the food. Right. I love something you don't. Okay, that means that in your opinion, it doesn't. It's not great. Don't go back. Don't watch it.
Right.
Move on.
Absolutely. Here we go. Wavy D put, fair question. Bear with me. If we are going to make a big deal about AEW passing Nitro, can we hold them accountable like any other big promotion and stop with the young promotion excuses? Well, no, because WCW still had 30 years of history before Nitro. And so, like, I don't think we're giving AEW a pass on they're still a young promotion. We're just saying they have less time in the game, less skin in the game than WWE. And so they're still at a position of where they're still, like, I don't think people realize how hard it is to get name recognition when you have a company as big as the media conglomerate that WWE and TKO is. How hard it is to compete in that market.
Yeah, and then Wavy D's most recent comment said the wrestlers had history. WCW was a new company. That's still inaccurate. WCW was a company in 1988 after Ted Turner bought it from Jim Crockett Promotions. So WCW as a brand started in 1988.
Correct.
And they had their pay-per-views, their big events, like Starrcade and Halloween Havoc and Great American Bash and Clash of the Champions, Super Brawl, had Saturday Night, had WCW Pro, had WCW Main Event. They weren't Nitro, but that was their biggest show, was Saturday Night for 6 years. And then in 1995 is when Nitro started. So that's 7 years, 90 plus 5, 95, 5 plus 2. Yeah, 7 years before Nitro even came on board. And 7 years before that, they had Saturday Night. So I don't think the comparison is the same, because WCW still had a 7 year branding period that people still followed them. And then Nitro came about in 1995. It was a brand new show, right. But WCW as a brand had already lasted for 7 years prior to that.
Right. Well, and then even then, the way you marketed a product within the wrestling industry has changed since the early to mid 90s. There was no social media marketing. There was no global marketing. Like, WWE wasn't pushing like the German tour as hard as they're doing the international tours now, back in the 90s. Like, they went overseas, but they weren't as big of a deal. There wasn't this big push to like advertise in many different market sectors. And so, like, we've said for the longest of time, AEW needs to work on their marketing. They've done a really piss poor job of marketing. They're getting a little bit better.
I think they've definitely gotten better as far as the production value and marketing, right, of the upcoming shows. And then, right, the quick little 15-second spots for their upcoming commercial, like they did with Revolution and what they did with Dynasty now with the spray painting and the Philadelphia characteristic theme behind it. It's been, right, fantastic. I think that they've done a really good job over the last couple months doing that. And like we've said for a year plus prior, they sucked at it. And that was why one of the shows just always did poorly, was because they had a 2 week build and like, oh, hey, right, we're coming to your town in a week. And it's like, why didn't we know this,
right,
prior?
Right, right.
But
yeah,
it is.
There's still room to grow. They're not perfect at marketing in no way, shape or form. But like, they're doing marketing even so much better on the show, promoting the Owen, promoting Double or Nothing,
All In,
and all of that stuff. MJF, here's a thing where even Meltzer said today, they should have mentioned it on the show yesterday. MJF threw out the first pitch at the Texas Rangers game today. No one knew about it until this afternoon. They had an opportunity to have a lot more people maybe show up and learn about AEW at the Rangers game had they announced it. So like they're not perfect in any way. But I don't think we're giving them an excuse by saying they're a young promotion. It's just the truth. Relatively, compared to WWE, compared to TNA and New Japan, they're the youngest promotion, and there's still those hiccups that they have to work on in terms of getting the product perfect.
This episode hasn't been a Gluck Gluck 2000 and excuses to cover AEW's failures. We're explaining to you why things are where they are. We've already said they weren't perfect, but in your delusional brain, you still think that we're covering for them and that they're perfect. And I guess when somebody's miserable, that's how they interpret things, and that's fine. I don't know, but that's what you get.
We'll end it with this last comment, and then we've rocked the boat, and I was gonna say soured the sauce, but you told me earlier today that we had to change it up a little bit to sweeten the sauce. So we rocked the boat, and we sweetened the sauce a little bit today. We're gonna end it with this comment by Mr. Cloud Felter. They still have people talking about them, good or bad. We are still talking about them. To steal, we bitch about Eric Bischoff a lot, but any press is good press.
Any press is good press. Yep. And
so y'all talk bad about AEW. They're still
we talk
coming
fair. I think.
Right. I mean,
and we're still talking about them. So.
So it was still being talked about, but hey, this was a fun episode. Next week is our AEW Dynasty prediction show. We'll have the same structure. We'll do the intro. We'll do the on this day and the birthdays, and then maybe we'll spend a little bit of time on maybe having a small rant. But the majority of the show will be the prediction show. And then the week after, well, I just realized we're going to have to take the week after off because I am on vacation that week. And so, unfortunately, unless Marinara wants to hijack the show, we will have the next week after that off. And then the week after is the week that Nitro goes down.
It's gonna be a great show.
We're gonna celebrate the history of AEW Dynamite on that show in 3 weeks' time. Stay tuned for that. We'll see y'all next week on the Dynasty. I always get Dynamite and Dynasty tongue-tied. The Dynasty prediction show, but. Like always, the one thing that stays the same is we're going to go off the same way. Mr. Marinara, say the final words.
For all of our friends out there, whether you like AEW, you hate it, you're a Texas Rangers fan, it makes no sense, or you don't. If you're a Braves fan like us who got their asses kicked today, it's fine. Either way, what you have to do is stay positive, stay saucy. Beyond.